Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. That's Van Halen bringing us back. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Donna Childs is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned earlier. At one point in time, she was a senior executive at Swiss Reinsurance Group, which is a large reinsurance company. At the time, she was based in downtown New York City, southern tip of New York City. And she lived through and was one of the survivors of the attacks on the World Trade Center that year in 2001. And she's got something to say about all that. She's got some perspectives that she wants you and me to know about to be prepared for any disaster eventuality. She wrote a book called Prepare for the Worst, Plan for the Best, and she's our guest. Donna, welcome back. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. Now, you told me off the air that you were actually in the World Trade Center on September the 11th, 2001.
Yes, I was. I live in Battery Park City, which is the artificial extension of the island of Manhattan.
Right.
Battery Park City was formed when the World Trade Center was built. So the landfill that was excavated extended the island a few blocks, and it's a residential community. So the World Trade Center is the anchor of our neighborhood. There's a shopping concourse, and many residents go there once or twice a week to do our errands. And so I was there in the pharmacy that morning when the plane struck the towers.
You were in the pharmacy when the plane struck the tower?
Yeah, there was a shopping concourse level, and I was in the pharmacy at the World Trade Center.
What did
that
you
morning.
Think?
What
were your senses when that plane hit? What were the senses? How did it affect your senses? The noise, the vibration, whatever.
I also lived in the area, the same apartment building, but a different apartment, and for the 1993 bombing. So I thought that's what it was.
Right.
And so the police came in and told everybody to get out. And so when we got out, there was
so
a
you
lot
had no of you had no idea the magnitude of what had happened.
No, I didn't. So when I got out of the building, it looked like there may have been a fire or something. So I called the.
Were
office
you in the Were you in the building that was hit, or the North Tower was hit? The South Tower was hit first, right?
Right.
And were you in the North Tower or the South Tower?
I was in the South Tower, but
right.
the concourse goes underground. It connects the two.
Right. Right.
So I got out. I called the office and said, I think everybody better go home because whatever it is, it's just going to be very unpleasant.
Were your offices in the building?
No, they're on Wall Street, just a few blocks away.
I see. Okay.
And then I went straight to my apartment. So that's where I stayed when the towers fell in part on my apartment building.
How far was your apartment from the buildings?
Two blocks south.
So you stayed in your apartment two blocks away from these buildings falling down?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, of course we didn't know they were going to fall, but that's what
right.
happened. Yeah.
Right. And how did you tell us? Give us quickly. Tell us what your thoughts were that day.
Well, there was a lot of confusion because we lost our electricity right away, so I couldn't watch what was happening on the television. And my apartment faces south and west, so I look out on the Hudson River, New Jersey, and
right.
the Statue of Liberty. And so my neighbors opposite the hallways look out north, so they see the World Trade Center. I don't. My back is to it. So I was looking out the window, and I saw several thousand people standing in the street watching what was happening. So I was watching them while they were watching the Trade Center burn.
Right, right.
And then when the Trade Center started to collapse, we heard this rumbling sound. They began running south, as far as, just running
towards
the
area.
No, away from me. So, like,
okay.
away from me, away from the Trade Center.
I got you.
And then when the towers fell, it was like this streaming sheet of gray outside my windows while all that soot and ash fell, so you couldn't see anything out the windows.
And without any knowledge of anything going on, you probably didn't have cell phone coverage or anything else, you probably thought Armageddon had happened or something.
Well, when the towers fell and there was that sort of gray wall like of the apartment, it was like a gray sheet when all the soot was coming down. I thought it was a chemical attack.
Yeah, yeah, frightening times. And I'm glad you're one of the survivors, Donna. Now, what? But this changed you, didn't it?
Well, it did. We had to evacuate. Battery Park City was the only residential community in Manhattan that was evacuated and closed by civil authority. So with my neighbor and his dog, we got on a boat. The New Jersey State Police had brought up all these boats to sort of a makeshift dock, and they brought us across the Hudson River to New Jersey, where I stayed for several months because I was homeless when the neighborhood was closed. So the National Guard controlled the perimeter of the neighborhood. We were allowed back in once to collect some clothing and personal effects, but that was it. And at the same time, my office is just a few blocks away. But my office was allowed to reopen a week later because the office is on Wall Street. And because of the symbolic importance attached to reopening the New York Stock Exchange and Wall Street, we were allowed to reopen September 18th. But if we would have been one block in either direction, our reopening would have been delayed by more weeks.
Right. And so you wound up staying in New Jersey, right?
Yes.
And so that's where you live now. Okay, so now your book, Prepare for the Worst, Plan for the Best. When did you publish that first? Because I know it's now out in second edition.
Right. The first edition we wrote shortly after 9/11 when we realized how unusual our experience was in terms of being disaster ready. And then the second edition just came out April 30th.
Right. So tell the audience a little bit about what you think they should be doing based on what you experienced yourself.
Well, what we experienced was, you know, my office building, even though we were allowed to reopen a week later, we were without essential services for some time. So no electricity, no gas, no water, no landline telephone, mail delivery, no pedestrian access. And, you know, very few small businesses were prepared to work through that sort of disruption.
Mm-hmm.
So by December 2001, just a few months after the attacks, I would come to work and there would be, you know, Marshall's eviction notices taped on, you know, one out of every two office doors in that building.
Right.
The small businesses were just falling like dominoes.
Right.
And so I started to realize...
All the vendors that you'd counted on for food or for dry cleaning or whatever it might have been, some small a vendor of some kind, all those little businesses, they just collapsed, didn't they?
Most of them did, yeah. They were, and it's not just that they suffered property damage, because most of them did not suffer property damage.
Right.
It's just that they weren't ready to work through that type of disruption.
Well, and not only had they lost a lot, but their customer base had gone, hadn't it?
Yeah, for the restaurants and so forth in the area. I mean, the World Trade Center had 50,000 workers who have to have lunch every day.
Right.
So that was devastating for the restaurants, particularly those that do takeout service.
Right. Absolutely. So you saw all of that, and you said, you know what, these people... In the future, when this happens again, if this happens again, whatever happens again, people need to be prepared for that. It caused you to write the book, and we come back. Donna Childs is going to give us some specifics, some things that you and I need to know about to be prepared for the next whatever may happen to us. And folks, as you know, for all of us, some way or another, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. 20 after, stay with us.
Won't you come away with me?
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. I hope you'll check those out and use them to your advantage. Donna Childs is our guest, and she's the author of Prepare for the Worst, Plan for the Best. And folks, a little bit of clarification. Her own small business is called Childs Capital. Is that correct, Donna?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Childs Capital. And when she moved back to the United States, having worked abroad for a while, she moved into Wall Street area near the downtown area, not far from the World Trade Center, moved back and started her own small business, Childs Capital. So you were there during 9/11. You were not supported by some big company, you know, like the one you had worked for before. You were actually working there as a small business, and so when you talk about what small business owners went through after that disaster, you were living that. You weren't just observing it. You were living it, weren't you?
That's right. I mean, my background working before I started my own small business, I lived in Zurich, Switzerland, and I was a senior executive for the world's largest reinsurance company.
Right.
And my responsibility in that job was to advise C-level executives of Fortune 500 companies about disaster preparedness and risk management. So when I returned to the United States and started my own small business, I was exceptionally well prepared.
Right.
And so when 9/11 happened, I was kind of a statistical outlier in terms of having a disaster plan in place, business interruption insurance, you know, my insurance claim was paid in full, 100 cents on the dollar within 3 days of submission. And when I realized how unusual I was,
right,
that's when after 9/11, I approached a publisher and co-authored a book, and now the second edition's come out.
Okay, we hope that we don't have any more terrorist attacks. Who knows what's going to happen? But there's definitely a hurricane bearing down on the central part of the United States right now.
Mm-hmm.
So in the next week or so, a lot of things could be happening to a few people. What is your advice to them?
Well, in terms of disaster preparedness, I think one of the common misconceptions is that people should focus on the worst-case scenario, and that subsumes everything else. And when I was in the reinsurance industry, that's actually not the advice that we give to our clients. What we advise is to prepare for the everyday disaster,
mm-hmm,
the high-frequency disaster, the human error, the computer crash, the power
right.
outage, and then you gradually build resilience for the more serious disaster. And that's what I did. So, for example, when I set up my small business and I established my office, I never anticipated something on the order of magnitude of 9/11.
Right.
The worst-case scenario that I could think of was like a fire in the nearby Wall Street subway station that would cause me to lose access to my building for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
But what I put in place was sufficient to get me through the worst. So if I were in an area, let's say I just returned from the Gulf Coast, I advise them I wouldn't necessarily be paralyzed thinking about Category 5 hurricanes. I would be thinking about preparing for the everyday one and building resilience for the more serious.
Losing your laptop, somebody stealing something, a hard drive crashing, as you say, maybe a car hits a pole and you're without power for a day or so or something like that.
Yeah, something that can actually be seen as kind of trivial, and sometimes you
right.
think of it as a daily nuisance, but in fact it's an everyday disaster, and your ability to recover from that one has some predictive value for how your small business will do if you face a more serious threat.
So I like your way of thinking here, Donna. You're saying start small, look at the things
right.
that could actually happen to you this afternoon, and then work outwardly in concentric circles until you get the little stuff covered, then you start working on maybe some of the bigger stuff to ultimately maybe one day you might even, you know, the big, to me, for a small business, the big stuff would be having your own generator and switch.
Exactly. Well, think about, for example, a power outage, right? So a power outage can occur on a standalone basis. We just had one
right.
A few years ago where 50
right.
million people were left without electricity.
Right.
And we have brownouts all the time in the city. We had one just recently where people in Queens, which is a borough of New York City, were left without power for 9 days. Not because of a terrorist attack, but because of the city's aging infrastructure. So power outages can commonly occur on a standalone basis. But they also occur commonly following a serious disaster, like a hurricane, like an earthquake, or a terrorist attack. So if you would have prepared for a power outage on a standalone basis, you'd be more prepared for the power outage that follows a more serious disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Or think about human error, right? Human errors occur all the time.
Right.
Somebody mistakenly deletes a file. Well, how might you reduce the consequences of human error? Well, you do things like you'd back up your data. So if somebody
right.
mistakenly deletes something, you can recover a backup. But when you do that, that puts you in good stead for the more serious disaster when you're going to need that backup because you have to move off-site.
Well, that's something, you know, we actually back up our stuff off-site. We
mm-hmm.
actually use a service that automatically, you know, every day it automatically comes in and you know, and pings our units and our computers and pulls anything new out and it's literally offsite in our server farm somewhere.
Exactly. So, but that would also protect you not only against a more serious threat, but also against human error if somebody accidentally deletes a file or you get
exactly.
a virus, something. So it does both.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. By the way, before we go any further, the book is called Prepare for the Worst, Plan for the Best, ladies and gentlemen. Donna R. Childs, second edition out right now. Donna, tell the audience how they can find you on your website.
Well, we have a new website for the book. It's called www.preparedsmallbusiness.com. And
okay.
then the website for my business is www.childscapital.com.
Last thoughts. Got 30 seconds.
Well, part of the title is Plan for the Best, and that's because if you put a disaster preparedness plan in place, your business will realize some immediate benefits even if disaster never happens. You'll be more efficient, more profitable. In my case, I reduced my insurance costs by having a disaster plan in place.
Wow. And can you do that? Can you show your disaster plan to your insurance company and get a reduction?
You can. You should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you can,
absolutely.
You should have their input.
I agree. So, folks, talk to your insurance company. It's not just something to do for the future, folks. It might save you some money today. Hey, Donna, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next time. Donna Childs, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back one of these days. We'll have her back and talk to her some more about this topic. Quick break, right back. Stay with me. I'm Jim Blasingame.
Well, Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.